this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. Hey, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. And have you ever wondered how you can command a room, how you can just walk in and have everybody look at you and just say, oh my goodness, this is a person I need to know. How can I get to know them? Well, this is what we're going to teach you today. I have a special guest on. His name is Jason Capital. He's the author of a book called High Status, which is where he teaches you how to get exactly what you want, what I described there. So, Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Craig. Glad to be here with you, man.
Awesome. So, Jason, I knew you a long time ago. We met back in 2009. I believe you were 20 years old, right?
Yeah.
Awesome, man. And so it's obviously you are the type of person who's going to take action and learn a whole bunch of stuff. And so just give us a quick background of what you've accomplished in your young years since we first met back in Washington, D.C. at Yannick Silver's Underground. So we should give a shout out to Yannick because he gave you that scholarship to the Underground back then. Then you just went and you took action like almost nobody's business, and you've had great success. So tell us about that.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you to Yannick if you're listening right now. Although, Yannick, I do have a bone to pick with you. And I don't know if you know this, but they gave out 10 scholarships that year.
Right.
I was number 11 on that list. And number 10 was from a country where they had all kinds of problems in the Middle East, and she wasn't allowed to come to America.
Ooh.
So they call me, and they go, hey, Jason, number 10 can't make it. You're 11, but you still want to come? Sure. I'd love to come. Thank you so much. And now, you know, 8 years later, I'm weird. I keep track of where all those people are right now.
I was just going to say, whatever happened to.
And 8 out of 9 are invisible. I couldn't tell you.
But somebody else has been.
There is one guy, his name's Syed, who is a very successful blogger and WordPress kind of software guy.
Oh, that's really awesome. So, cool. You know, 20% success rate, though, is really, really great.
Listen, if fitness programs got 20% success rate,
right,
obesity would not be a problem right now in America.
Well said. Well said.
So, you asked how I got here and kind of very quickly about me. So, when I was younger, I was very shy. I was that very reserved guy. I was the wallflower. I was afraid to there's someone inside of you where you're like, I wish I could just bring this person to the forefront and just be this person, the person I know I am. Yet you have all these stories and blockages and things that stop you. And you kind of end up watching life just pass you by as everyone else gets what you want. And you just relegated to leftovers for everything. And I didn't want that.
Were you that way when I met you? Where were you? Like if that was a 1 at your worst and you know, you're a 9 or 10 now, where were you then?
I was a 4 or 5. So okay. I met you about 2 to 3 months into my own personal development journey.
Oh, okay.
I think every successful entrepreneur has to go through some self-development, personal development journey. There's a lot of people who are very cynical about personal development stuff, yet you notice they're never the ones who are successful.
Right.
Right. It's like the same people who criticize you in comment sections. You notice if you're not in front of them and they don't have you to criticize, they'll just go and criticize someone else. They are chronic criticizers. So I think, you know, personal development is so important, in my opinion, just from looking at from Mark Cuban's to Richard Branson's to Warren Buffett's, who credits the Dale Carnegie course he took 60 years ago as the most, like you go to Warren Buffett's office, he has a degree from Columbia that doesn't hang on the wall. The only thing on his wall is his Dale Carnegie graduate's course.
Wow.
Because he considers that his real education in life. And that's what I consider the most important thing, which isn't what school did you go to or degree or is your last name Kardashian or Kennedy. Those things don't matter. What matters in life in order to get the life you want, in order to be successful, is your communication skills. We all know people who things just seem to go their way. Like why is it that some people get to live their dreams while most of us kind of get a nightmare? Like, what is the difference? Well, the difference is the people who get to live their dreams, who get to do what they want, they're great communicators. They have charisma. They know how to build rapport. They don't repel people. They magnetically attract people. To people on the outside looking in, it looks like they have some secret, that there's some magic, there's some voodoo, there's something they're doing to not have to work as hard, to kind of take days off if they want, to do the things they want, yet everyone kind of is like, oh, well, that's because it's him or that's because it's her. So they get away with it. Well, why can't you get away with it? What is it they're doing? The only difference is that they signal higher status on an unconscious level to everyone around them, and the people who fight and claw for every last drop signal low status. That's the difference.
Yeah. And so, you know, when I think of that, I think back to like college, and you think of the guys who were extroverted who, you know, maybe they didn't study, but they got like the answers from somebody else. And you're like, that's not fair. But in a way, that's life. I mean, that really is life. And the thing is, you could go and do that same sort of thing. You didn't have to be extroverted to do it because you can learn these skills, as I guess that's what you're saying, if you were a four at one point.
That's exactly right. It's extremely learnable. It's the same thing as riding a bike. It's like, I always tell this story, which is kind of crass, I guess we could say. But at events, when someone asks me a question like that, I'm always like, so tell me, when you came out of the womb and the first time you had to go to the bathroom, did you know how to go? Like, did you know where to flush and what button to push and the whole, it's a big process when you're young. This is like a series of steps, but you learned it, right? You didn't know it. You practice it and then you got better at it. Now you know how to go to the bathroom and good for you. Like you could go right now and have no problem. Good for you. But it's the same thing. Any social skill can be learned. If you're shy right now, it's simply because you have been acting shy as of late. If we got you to flip that switch and you started acting more charismatic, acting more caring, acting more charming, acting more social, acting more giving, and that's what you did maybe the last 10 days, last 30 days, last 40 days, all of a sudden your identity would start to change and you would go from being shy, reserved, and missing out to extroverted, social, and in demand.
All right. So just to retrack our steps here a bit, what was the thing that got you going? So 2 to 3 months before I met you, what was it that, you know, was the first thing that you read or the first product?
Sure. So I, you know, total confession here, I'll share with a bunch of people I don't know. Growing up, I was very bad with girls. I was just very shy around girls. I had no problem hanging out with my guy friends and telling stories and cracking jokes. But the minute a girl came around, it was like this transformation took place in me. And I went from being outgoing to reserved and shy. And
like shutting down.
Almost. Shutting down. I'm walking on eggshells. I don't want to say anything. I don't want to bore her. I don't want to make her get the, I got to go find my friends line where they leave you. Like I was so afraid of rejection, of being myself, of being my true self out there. And the inciting event was what I went to Michigan State, and this is my fourth school in 4 years. So I failed college 4 times with a smile on my face.
Oh, wow.
So I'm very, if you want to be an entrepreneur, college is certainly not the way to waste $100,000. There's much better ways to waste $100,000.
Sure.
If you're an entrepreneur, doctor, that's something different. So I go to Michigan State and all my friends, we go to a frat party one night and we walk in and it's my first frat party ever. I'm 20 years old. There's lights, there's all kinds of magic going on. There's dragons and there's wizards and this is incredible.
There's gotta be a unicorn or two, even though it was 9 years ago.
There's three of them up there and I'm totally sober because I didn't drink at the time. And there's red cups everywhere, right? Typical frat party. And they immediately, it's like effortless for them. They find girls. And one guy is like, she's giggling. Another guy is like doing like pirouettes with her. Another guy is breathing fire out of his mouth as she applauds how good he is at the fire breathing thing. And I get to talk to a girl. Finally, right? It's the big moment. And in 30 seconds, we go from exciting to, listen, it was really nice meeting you. I got to go find my friends. And she just leaves me. And my friends are gone. And I'm just all alone looking at all these people who just seem to know what to do here. And I have no idea what to do. And that was enough for me. That was my inciting incident. I run home and I go to my apartment and I make a stand. I will never let that happen again. It's crass, but I was like, I will be great with women. I will be confident with women. I will be confident with friends. I will be confident in life, and no matter what environment I step into, whether it's work, office, gym, it doesn't matter.
Well, it wasn't crass the way you described it, and I thank you for that.
Of course.
Because I know you could have been crass.
I can go there.
But that's a beautiful thing, the way you just described. I mean, what you're saying is you're going to be great for people. You're going to be great to people.
Yes.
And that's what you've been able to do.
That's exactly right.
So we never did get the answer to the question, which is, what have you done since 2009?
So I'll give you the very quick timeline. So
right.
I started my first online business at 20 years old, which happened. It's ironic. The personal development journey and this journey we're talking about here and the entrepreneurship all happened at the same time.
Well, I'll just interrupt you and I'll say, having done so many weight loss transformations, I can say without a doubt that you cannot have a physical transformation without a mental transformation. Mm-hmm. And now I'm starting to see that you can have a wealth building transformation without a personal development transformation, a mental transformation as well. So
absolutely.
You're teaching me that today. So thank you. So you started this and things were going great.
And things are going great. And I go from broke college kid to making $20,000 a month in 2 months, thanks to some of the things you taught me, some of the things Yannick Silver and Joel Marion taught
me. Sure.
And then I, okay, great. I'm making money. I build an online business. I moved to San Diego. I moved to the beach. I'm living life. And I started hanging out with some bad people when I'm in San Diego and I'm 22 years old. And as you know, your environment is so important to your success. And I started doing some things I shouldn't have. And within a few months, all that money, that business I had, gone.
Oh.
Bank account goes from lots of, you know, it didn't look like a phone number, which was one of my goals at the time. I was like, I want to log into Bank of America and see a phone number, right? Seven of them.
Yeah.
It was six of them. And then within a few months, it was just a zero. And at
just the operator's number.
Yes. I could, she's always there for me, right? So, you know, broken and broke, I moved back home to my parents' basement. I'm sleeping in a basement and my parents, they'll put a roof over my head, but that's it. I got to get food. I'm living on bananas because that was all I could afford. I would eat 13 bananas a day and protein powder, and that was all I was doing. And I set a goal in that basement. I imagine it's like Tony Stark's cave. Iron Man's one of my favorite movies, where I set this goal of like, I need to figure out how to get what I want in relationships, how to master my emotions, how to master my business so I can get the life that I want without losing it, right? And within 9 months from that point, I went from, so I'm making money, go to zero, and then I went from zero and I became a millionaire for the first time in 9 months. So at 24, that I made my first million, and I have all these great relationships with people and friends, and I have an amazing girlfriend today. And now I'm 28, very, very successful business. I have clients in over 100 countries. We have over 10,000 success stories in our database, which is just the coolest thing ever to see that many people who have transformed the same way I did in such a short amount of time. And during that period, there was one thing that I discovered that made it all happen for me to go from zero to millionaire in 9 months, to master my emotions, to master my relationships, to master all this stuff. And it was high status. That has been the thing for myself and all these clients worldwide.
Right. And so now you have a book, High Status, yes. And you have an event, an annual event about high status, right?
That's correct. Yes.
Awesome. So I'm going to be speaking at that this year. Really excited for that. What do you think is the value of that early failure? And you know, for entrepreneurs that are listening, beginner entrepreneurs, even successful entrepreneurs, people that are thinking about becoming entrepreneurs, you know, you were young, you were 23 when you had that early failure. Do you think everyone's going to have an early failure, or can it be avoided through some of the stuff that you would teach, or is there value in having a little bit of early failure?
To anyone who's listening right now, I sincerely hope and pray that you fail like I did. It was the greatest thing that could have ever happened to me. I know, Craig, you've had your own failures when you were younger, and I'm sure you cherish and value them super highly too.
Well, I'm going to interrupt you again.
Yeah.
So when I met you in 2009, I was at a point where I had made a bad contract decision with somebody, and I was spending $9,000 a month. And, you know, that's not pocket change to anybody. And I was like, I'm locked into this contract, spending $9,000 a month, getting myself into something I don't want to. And I knew this. Here's how I knew it was so bad. I was yelling at my dog when I would walk him, and I'd be like, there's no reason to yell at the dog. And so I was like, I called the guy. Well, it was actually at Yonic's event. I had a conversation with Matt Smith, my future business partner. He wasn't a business partner at the time. And he said, Craig, you got to get yourself out of it. He's a very wise guy. And so I had phone conversation like the next day, and like the weight of the world was off my shoulders.
Yes.
But you know, that was one of the ways that I have failed over time. And so everyone's going to have a bunch of them, you know, but it's good to go through one and realize and come out the other side stronger, right?
It's so important. It is the resistance with which your emotional muscles will get stronger. Without that worldly resistance pushing against you, and you have to bench press it back, your ability to persevere and turn obstacles into advantages, that muscle will never grow, will never hypertrophy, to use an exercise term.
Sure.
But it'll never happen. You need that resistance to grow. Otherwise, it's like you go to the gym, if you keep lifting 5 pound dumbbells, I think there's some research that shows you can build a little bit of muscle even with that. But you're not gonna grow to the level you wanna grow, and you need that. And the way I look at it is, I always say it's like, that if you're going through that thing right now, that thing that's just like, you're like, I can't get out of it. It's so stressful. It's so hard. It's keeping me down. I'm in a different situation than you, Jason, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I look at it as that is going to be the page. It's just one page in your story. That's how I looked at it. It's that turning point in the story. Can you imagine reading someone's biography where from chapter 1 to chapter 20, the whole thing, it's just he killed it, he killed it, he killed it, he killed it, end of story. Like, you'd be like, this is the most boring story of all time. Without that kind of pain and that going downhill and trying to figure it out, the story's not interesting.
Right.
You need that. I needed to lose all that money and go in that basement because now not only it makes me so much more of an interesting person, but I can share that story. It can inspire other people.
Right. That was your hero's journey.
That is exactly right.
Okay. And so there's actually overlap between having that failure and then having the success with the girls. Sorry, it's like desensitizing yourself. So, you know, you desensitize yourself to failure, mm-hmm. and then you desensitize yourself to scary situations. Is that kind of what you teach in some of the stuff that you're showing people, how to get out of that comfort zone and try those new things?
100%. Yeah, you have to, you know, one of my mentors, Dan Pena, who's this crazy billionaire guy who lives in a castle in Scotland, and literally sounds exactly as crazy as I just described him.
Right.
He yells and he barks, he does all kinds of things. But he always talks about you have to build up your emotional bank account.
Okay.
And what that means is every time you do something that is pushing outwards on your comfort zone, where your heart races a little bit and maybe your tongue gets a little dry and you get a little shifty or nervous, those situations are good because every time you go through that situation, you actually walk through that door and you come out the other side. Now your brain goes, oh, I can actually do things that scare me and I don't die.
Yeah.
Right. I will still survive. Everything's okay. The world is still the same. But when you do that also, it's like making a deposit in your emotional bank account. And the more deposits you can make in your emotional bank account, the bigger emotional bank account you have, the more scary situations you can deal with because you always have enough resources to deal with it. That's the whole game. And he always talks about it. And it's so true that he told me, he said, Jason, your emotional bank account will run out far faster and sooner than your financial bank account, right? We allow scary emotional situations or things that frustrate us or are painful and we avoid them or whatever. We will stop taking action. We'll run out of that ability to persevere long before our money runs out. Like you will not make that phone call you have to make to close that deal because it's too scary long before you'll hold yourself back from it.
Sure.
Right? Because you don't have enough of an emotional bank account, even if your financial bank account is fine. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, I mean, this is really cool because I've known you for that long since you were 20 years old. And now I really feel, and I felt this many times over the years, that the student has really become the teacher. You've taught me so much about email writing and speaking and now the high status stuff. And it's really cool. So it really is important that we get into that. And you've told this great story online that kind of illustrates, well, it doesn't kind of illustrate, it totally illustrates exactly what high status is. So I would love for you to share that with us again.
Absolutely. So when I live in Orange County right now and Kobe Bryant is my neighbor, which I just tell everyone because it's the coolest thing. I think if anyone out there is like, Michael's better than Kobe, we need to have a discussion because I will prove to you that maybe not. But anyways, so I live in Orange County now. I used to live in LA, right in the Santa Monica area. And 4 or 5 nights a week, I go out with my friends and we used to go to this bar a lot called the Viceroy in Venice. It's a really cool bar. If you ever go there, I recommend you check it out. But one night we're there, and in my past, when I was doing a lot of coaching for men and how to do better and be more confident with women, I would constantly be observing behavior in bars. Where else can you study male women or male female interaction than a bar? Like that is the wild, like that is like Jane Goodall going to study the orangutan. Sure. Like that's it. So I'm out there and I'm just ones and zeros. I'm studying everything. And I see these three group of girls and they're all at the bar. They're drinking red wine and they're all done up. But you can always tell, I always tell clients when you walk into a bar, decide first before you go talk to someone, are they open or closed? Ask yourself. And it's very simple. You will unconsciously know if someone's open or closed. Their body language will be open. Their head will be looking around. That's how you know they're open. They want people to come talk to them. They want to be social. If they're closed, on the other hand, their body language is not open. They're only facing each other. They're not looking around. Their feet aren't open. They're just right in that moment with
girls' night out for them.
100%.
Yes.
Girls know it. Sometimes you go out because you want to be social. And other times you go out because you just want 2 hours to talk about nothing and everything with your girlfriend.
Right.
So
that's where they were, that group.
There's
of girls.
Three they girls. Were they were. It was a force field around them that could not be penetrated.
Great. But it could be, as you will show in a second, by the highest status of all status.
Little foreshadowing there, yes.
Yes.
And it's coming. So there is this force field around them. And I see this one guy who's bouncing around from table to table, being super social, good-looking guy, well-dressed, well-put-together, confident, seems to know everybody. I'm like, that's a pretty cool guy. He goes up and he tries to talk to these girls, which I applaud him for just even to go do that. And he gets shut down hard. No matter what he tries, says, he's pulling out every verbal tactic there is. They're not having it. They see right through it. Go home, son. That's what they're saying. So I'm like, okay, this is normal, right? This is what it happens sometimes, right? You know, better luck next time. Not 2 minutes later, does George Clooney come strolling into this Viceroy Lounge Bar. And he is the smoothest human being I've ever seen. George Clooney doesn't walk, he floats. Right. His eye contact is just piercing. People talk about Bill Clinton when you're talking with him. There's a reality distortion field, and it's just you two, and he makes you feel like you're the only person in the world. George Clooney has the same thing with his eyes.
Wow.
And he's smooth, and he's not fidgety, but he's got this, he floats, right? His body language is powerful. And he has this aura about him, this magnetism about him. And as he walks in, some people, they don't even have to see his face. They just start looking from the back. They can just tell there's something different about this guy. And all the heads turn. And as he goes to the girls, I see him make a straight beeline for these three girls. And as he approaches, it was like, it was incredible. I had x-ray vision on, and I see the force field just fall. And it's just down. And their body language just shifts open. And he just walks right in, and he goes, "Hi, I'm George." And they just melt in that moment. They melt completely. "George, oh my, so amazing to meet you. Can I get," the girls are like, "Can I buy you a drink?" "George, I'm not," the girl's sitting down. She's like, "Let me stand up. You sit down, George. You, let me, do you want a shoulder rub, foot rub? What can I do for you?" It was like the most amazing, like 5 minutes ago, not talking to any guy. One guy who comes over has one thing the other guy didn't, and every door opens for him. What did George have that the other guy didn't? George Clooney is a high status human being. And what does that mean? It's not like people think high status is Lamborghinis or Chanel handbags or $1,000 shoes and you know Rolexes, and it's not. The unconscious brain sees through what we call those, like Robert Cialdini would call those ornamentations, okay. Right? You're trying to signal high status, but our unconscious brain knows those aren't real signals of high status. Scientists call them honest signals of high status, or they would call those dishonest signals of high right. status. What you want to be projecting, what George Clooney projected, is what scientists would call honest signals of high status. And there's only 12 of them, and they're all in the book. And there's high status eye contact, vocal tonality, high status walk, high status charisma, high status rapport building. There's actually 12 in total. And that's what he did. And everything changed for him because of that.
Right. And now you said, because I've seen you present on this before, you talk about how 20 years before that,
yes.
George Clooney was a struggling actor. He was getting turned down in auditions. Yes. Do you know what was he always like that and he just needed a big break, or?
Two things changed. Okay. So you're exactly right. So before George Clooney became semi-famous on ER in the 90s, he bounced from audition room to audition room for 20 years in Hollywood, getting rejection after rejection after rejection after rejection. And finally, one day George wakes up and goes, "What am I doing here? This is not working. I am doing what Einstein called insanity. I'm the same thing over and over, and I keep getting a negative result." And he had a light bulb go off. He goes, "Why don't I change my approach? Why don't I change my strategy?" And which is one lesson right there. A lot of people after rejection, they would change their goal. They'd give up on the goal and go, "This isn't working. I'll try something else." Right? That's the person who's like, "You know, this whole being a writer thing didn't work. I'm going to go start a Starbucks or something."
Sure.
He never gave up on his goal. Like Confucius used to say, when the strategy is not working to achieve the goal, don't ignore the goal. Change the strategy. So George changes his strategy and he goes, "There's two things I'm not doing. One, I'm coming off as needy in these audition rooms, and everyone in there is needy because you're trying to get this person's approval. But the second thing is," he goes, "everyone who auditions, they are trying so hard to impress the directors, to impress the producers. That's low status behavior. It's low status behavior to be approval seeking or to be needy." He goes, "Why don't I go in there and instead of trying to impress them, I flip the script on them and I try to make them impress me and show them that they deserve me and show them that instead of being like, I'm the best actor ever, let me start asking them questions and start qualifying them and find out what is it that they're looking for in this role and then project that back to them so I'm the obvious choice." And he also used some rapport building tactics in there as well. So he changes the whole script to everyone else, and everyone who's auditioning is low status. He goes, "I'm going to be a high status individual." And all of a sudden, he gets the ER role, and then he gets a huge movie role, and then another, and then another, and then he's Danny Ocean, and now he's, you know, the world's sexiest man 84,000 times or whatever.
Right.
But everything changed the minute he decided to change from low status to high status.
That's amazing. So you mentioned rapport building a couple times, and I think that would be so important for our listeners, because rapport building is going to work whether you're a real estate agent, whether you are a salesperson, whether you are a doctor, whether you are anything, whether you're looking for a mate.
Yeah.
Tell us about high status rapport building techniques.
Absolutely. So the first thing that you need to be aware of is most of the rapport building tactics or techniques or information that's shared out there is is people who are low status teaching other people how to build rapport in a low status way.
Sure.
So doing all kinds of things to like get someone's attention and impress them and tell them how, you know, like if you're thinking for hours and hours how to signal that you care about someone or that are being thoughtful or anything like that, you are being low status in that moment. Do you think that Richard Branson spends hours and hours about how to send the right perfect gift to someone? And what is it? He puts some thought into it, but it takes 2 minutes. And whatever his decision is, he's decisive about it. And he just goes on to the next thing. Decisiveness is another quality of high status people. But most of that information out there is low status rapport building. High status people, they build rapport in a different way than everyone else. They don't go the needy 3 month, 6 month route. What I teach is what I call rapport accelerators. How do you build rapport with someone when you only have 5 minutes with them at a cocktail party or at a dinner party, or you meet them on the street and you only have a couple minutes to do it? Well, there are science-backed techniques that you can use to accelerate the rapport to make it feel like you've known the person for 12 months or 12 years in just a 12-minute period. So one of the things I want to share about that is one of the most taught, and it's horribly wrong, ways to build rapport is doing favors for other people. Right. And I'm not saying that for family or friends, you shouldn't do them favors. Like, I do solids for people around me all the time. And there's this natural flow back and forth of reciprocity, which is great. What I'm saying is if you go out of your way to do someone a favor and expect them to just reciprocate in return and expect them to just feel like, oh, what a great person, I will do anything for you, it won't work. I mean, we all know people that we've done favors for that we just get nothing in return, no matter what we try. The reason is high status people, like really, truly high status people in society, how many people do they have trying to do favors for them every day? How many people do you think try and do favors for Richard Branson every day, trying to gain his approval?
A lot.
He probably is. He is so trained to know any gift he gets from somebody he doesn't know or any favor he gets from someone he doesn't know to just like, yeah, I'm going to brush this to the side. I'll check it out. Never is like what he's thinking, because that's just how they're trained. Celebrities, the same thing. What you need to do is flip the script the same way Clooney did. And instead of trying to do that person a favor to build rapport, get them to do a favor for you. And it's so counterintuitive, but it works. And I'll tell you a story. The first person who I ever learned this from, very, very wise man named Benjamin Franklin. And 250 years ago, Benjamin Franklin is in the parliament in Philadelphia, and they're coming up for re-election. And there is a guy who lives about 20 miles away who's younger, he's better looking, he's a hot shot, people are talking about him, they're buzzing, and he wants Franklin's spot. And because of that, he doesn't like Benjamin Franklin. He wants to see Benjamin Franklin as an adversary, and he goes, I want your spot, Ben. Give it to me, right? He goes, I follow you, I see you on Instagram, I don't like your Instagram, I'm coming for your spot.
Right?
He is, Benjamin Franklin is Michael Jordan, and this is Kobe Bryant, right? So Benjamin Franklin is like, I don't want to lose my spot. And I don't want to get into a battle with this other person, because then I get tied down into like, I'm focusing on beating this person instead of helping my people, and that's distracting. So what he does is brilliant. He realizes and hears from a friend that this adversary is a bibliophile, loves books, and he happens to have this one rare book that no one else can find. So Ben, being brilliant, writes a letter to this guy and says, hey, I think you're fantastic. I hear you love books. I love books. In fact, I heard you have this one book I've been looking for years and I can't find it anywhere. Do you think I could borrow it? I'd really appreciate it. I'll return it to you exactly 6 weeks from the day I receive it at this time. Thanks. Guy gets the letter. All right, I don't want to be like an a-hole. Okay, I'll do it. So he sends the book back to Ben. Ben promptly gets the book, puts it on his desk, walks away, doesn't look at it for 6 weeks, tells him it works for him. Hey, get this book back to them 6 weeks from now on the exact date I said I would. And that's it. So then this happens, book gets back to the guy. And a couple months after that, they all meet in a big group meeting in Philadelphia. And Ben sees the guy for the first time since the favorite. And the guy walks right up to Ben. And Ben's like, what's he going to say? What's he going to do? And he walks up and he goes, Ben, so great to see you. You look fantastic. Here, I saved a seat for you. Come on, sit down. And this guy is as chummy as they come with him now. All of a sudden, Ben flipped this person from an adversary to an ally in an instant. Like, what did he do? Why did that happen? It's because this guy took something very valuable to him, this book, and he gave it to Ben. That was him taking like a piece of him, a valuable part of him, and saying, yeah, I trust you with it, have it, etc. The thing is, the human brain, anytime we do something for someone we have to rationalize why we did it immediately after the action. There has to be a reason why that fits in with our identity, fits in with our self-image. And what happens is when you do someone a favor and then you have to rationalize it, you go, why did I do this for this person? The only logical answer, which isn't logical at all, is I must like this person. So by getting someone to do you a favor, they start to favor you more.
Perfect. Yes. Perfect. Okay. So that is something that anybody can use right now.
Yeah.
Now, another one that we talked about, and you have a little story on this one, is the high status walk, which sounds kind of funny, but walk me through the high status walk and how anybody can use this to own a room.
Here's why I love the high status walk. Okay. For anyone listening, if you want to go from $0 to $1 million, it's going to take you some time. If you want to lose 30 pounds, it's going to take some time. Can't do it overnight. You can increase the, you can up your walk how fast? In a second.
Right.
Literally, it is an instant change that can produce massive results in every area of your life. What most people don't realize is that we, like, before we talk to someone for the first time, we see them walk. Our first impression is not based on the handshake in the first 30 seconds of conversation. It's based on watching them walk and seeing how other people respond to them. So if you come in with the low status walk, that's where you're going to get sorted, and then you're going to get treated that way. You're going to get treated low status, which you don't want. You're going to miss out on all the things you want. So
like if you walk in a room, like slouched over.
So if you walk in a room, you're slouched over, if your head's on a swivel a lot, I mean, you're constantly looking. What that signals unconsciously is I'm not cool. I'm not fun. Where's the fun, cool people? So I can go leech on to their joy.
Got it.
That's what we see. We don't want, like, if we're having fun here right now and we see someone looking around, oh, can go stick my teeth in them and suck some blood out. We're like, we don't want them here.
Right.
But if they walk over confident, happy, they look like they're in the zone, they look like they got things going on, we have no problem with them because we feel like this high status person, because they're high status, will add value to the situation. They won't suck it out.
Right.
That's what the high status walk is. And there's a few things we go over in the book, but one of the coolest things you can do, and I recommend everyone do this the next time you go to an airport, is as you're sitting at your gate waiting for the flight to take off, just do a little experiment and watch the people walking back and forth through the airport as they walk to their own respective gates. And what you'll notice is that they will be moving one of two ways. Either shoulders slumped over, looking around, not very happy, and they're just kind of like, just walking back. And you will see another group of people who are not like that. Shoulders back, head up. It's like they have a string from the crown of their head touching the ceiling that holds their body language and posture up, and they're looking straight ahead. They're not looking around. They're focused. They're excited about where they're going. Think about the phrase, that guy or that girl is going places. That's what they look like. They look like they're going places. And we as human beings, we want to associate, be friends with, and be around people who we believe are going places. So you can watch at an airport and you will see low status people walk by and you will see high status people walk by. And the reason for it at that airport typically is the people who have that low status walk, it's because they don't like where they're going. And I don't mean that metaphorically. I mean that literally. They don't like the destination that their flight is taking them to. Maybe they're going to a meeting in Cleveland, right? Or maybe they're going to, it's winter in Boston and they have to go there for a business meeting. Maybe it's a funeral. Maybe it's something like that. But you will see that the whole energy is dropped. Their body language is bad. You would size them up in a second and be like, I don't want to talk to that person right now. The high status people, though, they will be going to a destination they like. Maybe they're going to Aruba for a week. Maybe they're going to Hawaii. Maybe they're going to a moonlight party in Thailand for a week. Who knows? But they're excited about where they're going. And we as human beings, again, want to be friends with people that we think are going places, not with people who we think are just kind of going through the motions, kind of floating aimlessly in the sea of mediocrity.
Perfect, perfect. So parents can teach their kids about high status walks.
Yes.
How else can parents and families use high status stuff, parents helping their children or getting their children to do what they want?
Sure. So I'm gonna cover two things here real quick. The first one is, if you're a parent listening and you will recognize this immediately, your son or daughter, they have a specific vocal tonality, and we talk a lot about vocal tonality in the book, but they have a specific vocal tonality that they use when they want to just bypass your conscious brain and just get what they want. When they want to just mind F you, I'm going to say the word, right?
Sure.
To just get what they want. Like, it might be, hey, mom, you said we're getting ice cream, right? Mom, we're getting ice cream, aren't we? Mom, you're going to take me there, right? It has that assumptive uptick, is what it's called, at the end of the sentence. And it jars your brain because you're not listening. We don't really listen to the words people say. We listen to how they say it. And it sounds assumptive. It sounds like this person expects me to say yes. And we don't like to let people down. So I don't want to let my son or daughter down. I don't even know if I said I'd take them for ice cream. But they sound really certain, like I was supposed to. And before you know it, you know, you're getting them chocolate vanilla with strawberries on it, right? And you don't even know how it happened.
Right.
So be aware of the tonalities that they use. That's one thing that'll really help you. Because then you're like, son, I know what you're using right now. You're using that high status vocal tonality voodoo on me, and it's not going to work, right? So that's one. But the other one is, in the book, we talk about that there's three major tonalities that people use. There is the seeking rapport tonality, which means that it goes up at the end of a sentence. So it might be a statement, but you say it as a question. The optimal example I think of right now is Ron Burgundy, right? Where they change the script in Anchorman and Will Ferrell goes, hello, San Diego. I'm Ron Burgundy, right? And it goes up at the end. You turn a statement into a question. I'm gonna talk about why that's bad in a second. The second one is neutral rapport, which is how I'm talking right now. It's just a straight tonality. It doesn't go down, doesn't go up. Then there's breaking rapport tonality, which is almost talking down to someone. And it's where at the end of the sentence, you go down with the tonality. So like, what do you do? Or where are you from? Right? It has that kind of like, that it's a little
condescending.
It's a little antagonizing. But what it signals is when you use that breaking rapport tonality and you just use it deliberately, not a lot, but in specific situations where you want to signal, hey, I'm still the authority here.
Yeah.
You will do that. That's what it does. Like imagine the phrase talking down to someone. That's what you're doing. You don't want to do it for the full sentence, but if you're on a sales call and you're selling the other person something, but you want to be seen as the celebrity and the authority and the expert in the sales call, at the start of the call, the first 10 seconds, you should be using assumptive tonalities and breaking rapport tonalities to establish that in this conversation, hey, I'm the leader here. I'm the decision maker here. I'll tell you if you deserve this product or not, and then we'll go from there. That's what that tonality does. That's where it's really useful specifically. It's also really useful in relationships also. But parents, a lot of times, if they're not aware of it, they will command their son or daughter to do something, but they'll do it with that seeking rapport uptick tonality. Hey, will you clean your room? Will you please just clean the room? Will you go to bed? It sounds like a question. It doesn't sound like a statement.
Now the child is in charge.
Yes, you're literally putting the child in charge on an unconscious level. And honestly, if children ruled the world, would it be better or worse? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I like kids, but
it'd be entertaining. Yeah. As entertaining as it is now.
TV would be better. I know that, right? But if you are doing that, of course they're not going to respond. You are saying, hey, you're the decision maker, but can you clean your room? Can you do your homework, please? It's that would you maybe kind of, you need to come through. If you're going to tell them to do something, you need to come through with that. We call that commanding or challenging tonality with that authoritative, that breaking rapport. So it's not, can you clean your room? It's, hey, clean your room. You kind of clean your room. It goes down at the end. It's so subtle. How long does it take to learn that? It takes 1 second. You don't have to do incantations for 90 days.
Right.
And it's just real quick. And all of a sudden, you will notice your son or daughter just yeah, of course. They just start responding to you with much more compliance and a lot more respect than they were before.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. So now people have this for every area of life. Can you walk us through some real world examples? Now, we had one before that wasn't necessarily safe for work, but it was an amazing overnight change in status of an individual who went out and got what they wanted. And you've talked about, hey, you can change your walk in a second. You can change your vocal tonality in a second. So walk us through how somebody got a raise or a new business or, you know, made a real estate deal using high status.
So as we've talked about before, Craig, we have over 10,000 success stories at this point. They're all tracked and verified. It's crazy. And I think the reason we have all those success stories is because this stuff works instantly. Most personal development, it takes forever to change your mindset and your patterns of thinking. But this is just change your voice, change your walk. You do it all in a day and everything changes. So I have a guy who... Actually, one of my personal clients who a year ago, making 20 grand a year, teaching paintball, actually.
Wow.
And now a year later, he has his own business. He travels the world. He was in Bangkok and Paris and Tokyo. He was in Brazil. He's just living the dream. And he's making $1.5 million a year right now. It took a single year. And all the stuff he does, he has an online business, but all of it, he doesn't write copy. He doesn't know how to write copy. He just knows how to be high status on video and get responses and get people to send him money for his product or service. That way. I have another guy, a plastic surgeon in Chicago, who I've seen transform incredibly. He comes to all my events. And he's a guy who already had a great business in Chicago. He's one of the top plastic surgeons there. He has multiple locations. He has other doctors he's in a partnership with. But he's in his 40s and he's alone. And he can't find a relationship. All the girls he finds, either it's this or that or whatever.
Sure.
He's not attracting the right people. He becomes high status. He fixes this just a couple things. With him, it was just vocal tonality. And that's what's really cool. What people find is that you have some of the high status signals down correct. And it's usually 2 to 3 of them that are just blocking the results that you want. They're keeping you from, and we just change those things and it's like everything can change. So we fixed, it was his vocal tonality and his rapport building, his ability to build a connection with another human being. And now he's dating an incredible woman. He has an amazing relationship. They're talking about having their first kid. And it's like, you just, and when people get into, when they're alone for a while and they're not meeting the people they want, and then all of a sudden their whole social life or relationships change, you just see the smile. There's like this buoyancy in the way they carry themselves. And I see it in him. So that's been really cool. And then there's all, I mean, I literally, it's insane. The success stories. I saw one earlier today. There was a kid who went into a bank because he just needed to go into his account and he walked out with a job. He had no interest in it. It was just like the way he looked at him, the way he talked to him. There's just something about high status people that we just want to give to them. We want to give them opportunities. We want to be around them. They make us feel better about ourselves. And you know, it just goes on and on and on. We have real estate agents, we have copywriters, we have business owners, doctors, surgeons. And then, you know, I have a client of mine who invests a sizable chunk of his income because he doesn't have a super high paying job. He's a car mechanic, but his whole life has changed. His social life is booming. He's happy all the time. He's going to the gym every day. And it all started with him just making these shifts. And now he's the head mechanic at his shop. Before, he was just one of the lower guys in the totem pole.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I love it. So we could talk about this a long, long time, Jason. I really appreciate it. We covered just a few of them now. Everyone can get all 12 of the high status techniques in High Status, your book. Now, where can people get that?
So you just go to highstatusbook.com.
Yep.
The page will take you there and you can actually just fill in your information and we'll ship you the book for free.
Awesome. And if people want to take it up another level and go to your High Status Summit, that is?
So I'm just going to attach a rider here. Do not come to this event unless you are ready for massive transformation and breakthrough in your life. I need to warn you that you're going to be in a room full of action takers and ambitious people who operate at the highest of levels. And if you're not there, if you're just kind of like, yeah, I just kind of want an average life, then it's probably not the place for you. If you don't want an average life though, I would go to highstatussummit.com. I don't know when people are going to be hearing this. The event is coming.
But you're going to have it every year, probably.
We have it every year. That's always the website. But if you hear this at some point soon, go to highstatussummit.com and you'll see the tickets will be actually half off. We're running a little promotion right now.
Awesome. And I'll be there, right?
And Craig will be rocking the stage in high status style there. We're all very excited for that. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. This was a lot of fun. This was a lot of fun to catch up. So thank you very much, Jason Capital, author of High Status. This is Craig Ballantyne from Early to Rise Radio. And we will be back with another very special guest.